Thought the event was amazing. I thought that I knew a lot about real estate, but coming to your seminar, I realized there's a lot of things that I don't know. And one thing that you did besides teach me a lot about real estate is you inspired me to look beyond where I live and to, you know, kind of shrink down the world and make it smaller so that I can invest in places that are further away and get better returns. So I really appreciate that. And I'm excited to be here this weekend. And again, for me and from all the people I heard there, thanks for doing these events because they're great.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome and thank you so much for joining me today. Actually, I should say this evening, because that is when I am recording. I just made myself dinner. You know, the girlfriend is in California, I'm in Florida, so now she is a great cook, an awesome chef. But I tell you, I'm going to pat myself on the back. I think I'm getting kind of good at this cooking thing. You know, I never liked to cook. I always thought cooking was just overrated. I never really understood what people saw in the whole thing. I mean, I like to eat, but cooking, you know, that's just what you have to do to eat, right? But the reason I mention this is for this reason. Iteration. I want to talk to you about this very important concept of iteration. So I say that life is an iterative process, and anything we do that we are eventually going to do well, we always have to iterate. We have to try a few times to get it right. I've noticed when I make purchases of kind of anything, you know, I almost think in another life, I could run a company like Consumer Reports. That's a great company, awesome company. I love analyzing products and, you know, and services too, and kind of seeing what makes them tick, right? But whenever I buy something, it always seems like to really get it right, it takes me about three times to get the right product. You know, if I buy a bicycle, if I buy a computer, if I buy this or that, you know, I'll buy the first one and, you know, it's all right. I'll read the reviews, do my research, whatever. And then I buy the second one and that's an improvement. But by the time I do it the third time, like the old, maybe that's the reason we have the old saying, three is a charm. Three is a charm. So this concept of iteration, very, very important. And we do this with our real estate investments, right? Hopefully we are all becoming better and better investors every day. We're becoming better stewards of our financial wealth, right? The product of our time, our effort, our knowledge, our skills, this work, this product of our work, our money, right? We have an obligation to invest it wisely and to be good stewards of our money. So, iteration. Well, before I say that, The Lean Startup is a fantastic book. It is an excellent book by Eric Ries. I have not interviewed him on the show. I've interviewed almost everybody else. Eric, where are you? Why aren't you on the show yet? The Lean Startup is a fantastic book that kind of swept through the startup culture and basically really helped people understand the concept of these successful businesses, right? I don't know who it was. I want to say Andy Grove, but it wasn't Andy Grove. It was somebody, some business icon or tycoon, right? Who said, if you aren't embarrassed by the first iteration of your product, then you waited too long to go to market. You waited too long to release it. And I think that's an interesting saying. And I think the way that applies to us as real estate investors is, look, we are never going to figure it all out in advance, right? We always have to just jump in with gusto, as Og Mandino would say, in the Seeds of Success, great poem that I've shared with you before from the book Mission Success, and scramble through as well as we can, right? Well, what does this have to do with food, right? So as I'm making dinner tonight, I'm thinking, what is possibly the most iterated thing in the world? Well, everything has been iterated, and thank God for our ancestors, right? Because they figured out all this stuff for us, right? So the most iterated thing in the world is quite possibly food. Yeah, food is possibly the most iterated thing in the world. Why is that? Well, because every 4 hours, under current numbers, over 7 billion people want some more food, right? And so they keep experimenting, and they make it a little bit different every time, and they modify things. Well, what if I cook it longer, or don't cook it as long, or what if I just eat it cold, or what if I try this sauce or that sauce, or mix those two things together? I mean, hey, the olive oil's pretty good, but what if I add some balsamic vinegar to it, right? What if I season it with salt and pepper or turmeric or, you know, whatever, right? Iteration, iteration, iteration. I mean, how many forms of any dish of food are there? There are so many because it's so highly iterated and we've had so much time and practice at doing it. 7 billion people every 4 hours, well, or, you know, call it 3 times a day, not including some snacks. And, you know, hopefully the vast majority of those 7 billion people are eating. And, you know, we just iterate this and we keep making it better, right? So why is it that in life, we often expect the first attempt at something to just work out right? I mean, you know, you've heard the old worn-out cliche thing that motivational speakers talk about. They say that the one thing that everybody, well, they don't say iteration, but they use it as a slightly different way, but it's the same concept, right? They say the one thing that pretty much every human being figured out with trial and terror, trial and error, right? They kept getting hurt and messing up, and they finally figured it out. Well, it's walking, right? You know, pretty much everybody figured out how to walk, right? So they did that through iteration, right? They, you know, bumping your head, falling down, crying, you know, whatever, right? And so that's what happens in life. So why in the world would anybody expect to get, you know, anything right? Anything at all, right, the first time, right? You can always do it better. You always get better at it. And that is one of the beautiful, beautiful things about aging, about getting older. The experience and the confidence that come with every birthday is just, it's phenomenal. It's such a comforting feeling to just know that, you know, you just become more capable every year with every setback, with every problem, with every challenge you overcome. And that's the thing, right? So don't wish for no challenges. Look, the people that have no challenges are losers. You know, they're the spoiled brats of the world, right? They're the people who think the world owes them a living. They're the people who expect something for nothing. And sadly, I think we have an epidemic of this in our culture. We have a disease in our culture of this kind of entitlement attitude, right? It's just a terrible, pathetic disease. And the funny thing is about that entitlement attitude, you know, you'd think that, okay, if these people who have the entitlement attitude are out there in the world, and, you know, because of their entitlement attitude, a certain number of people are just giving them stuff without any quid pro quo, right? Value for value, right? Without that, you'd think that they would be, you know, feeling happy, like they're getting ahead. But the truth is, they don't. They don't feel good at all about themselves. And we see this over and over again in the world of celebrity. Right? We see this in music and movies and, you know, Hollywood and this whole group, right? Because what happens in that world most of the time, certainly not always, is a person struggles for a while and then they get discovered, right? They get discovered and the record label signs them or the movie executive signs them, and then everything is just easy from there, right? And so they got it too early, they got it too easily, right? We all know people who peak at an early age, people who peak in high school, right? You know, the football quarterback, the hottest cheerleader, you know, whatever, right? So they peak too soon, and then it's all just downhill from there. The Hollywood group. I mean, why is it that all these wealthy movie stars and wealthy musicians are having drug problems and going to rehab? Seriously? Like, you should be so grateful that your life worked out so well, right? And it's just nonsensical. That's how it seems to most of us. I don't think I'm alone in that. I think that's the way most people think about it, you know? Yeah, I'm sure fame has its difficulties and sudden fortune has its difficulties. Same with lottery winners, that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's iteration. That's what life is about. You know, Earl Nightingale shared that passage with you. I don't have it handy, but you know, he talked about how we need to earn our stripes through the daily passage of time and experience. I'm just saying that from memory. I don't remember exactly how it went. So that each successive step can be accepted and applauded by those who have come to know us. And then he goes on to say, meaningful and richly rewarding journeys take time. They take careful preparation and planning. That's how life works. You got to constantly iterate, right? In the Lean Startup book, Eric Ries talks about how Uber, when they built that system, and they just constantly iterated and noticed how it interacted and how people interacted with it and change this and change that and tweak this and tweak that. You know, you hear the story of some of these startup businesses. It's really amazing. You're thinking, are you kidding me? I would have never been your customer had I known, right? You know? But you didn't know, right? So it's a little bit of fake it till you make it, certainly. But you got to iterate, okay? So whenever you have a challenge, look at it. And I know this sounds so trite. I get it. What I'm about to say sounds so cliche. I know. Whenever you have a challenge, look at it as an opportunity, right? Because it is an opportunity, right? Every challenge is an opportunity. A great book that I read so many years ago was a book by Richard Nixon called In the Arena. I've shared some things he talks about in that. He talks about his terrible times and his high times. And, you know, if anybody had ups and downs in life, it was Richard Nixon in terms of a public figure, for sure. You know, he says, the poet Sophocles said, one must wait until evening to see how splendid the day has been, right? And it's that comparison, right? I think that's another thing when it comes to that sort of celebrity phenomenon, lottery winner phenomenon. You know, if you never had the hard times, you can't appreciate the good times because you don't know, you don't have a comparison. Why? How would you be grateful? How would you ever know to appreciate the abundant times in life if you never had any scarcity, if you never had any problems, if you never had any challenges, if you never had any difficulties? And I tell you, look, I am not a parent. I would love to be a parent someday, you know, but I'll tell you, I maybe don't have any right to give advice or even share my opinion on this, but we have so many parents that just spoil their kids. And it's like, you got to let your kids have some challenges, right? And, I mean, let them grow. And, you know, the helicopter parenting too, right? You know, we need a parentectomy in a lot of these cases, right? Where the parents have got to stop hovering over their kids. Let them be alone a little bit. Let them do some things for themselves. I mean, I don't think by any measure anybody would consider my childhood great. I don't think it was great, but I think there were some great things about it for sure. You know, I had a lot of time on my own, right? I walked to school, to and from school by myself. And, you know, I just had to experience the world independently. And it made me so much stronger. I mean, it made me very street smart. I went to crappy schools in Los Angeles where I was mugged in the hallway at knife point more than once, by the way. You know, crazy stuff. And, you know, it made me street smart. Nowadays, you know, if that happened, oh, people would freak out. You know, it's just kids don't have any, like, concept of the real world sometimes. You know, they're so sheltered, right? And I know not every kid is like this. I totally get it, right? But that's important. Give your kids wings, right? Roots are important, but wings are important too. And if you just give them roots, they're not going to develop any wings and they can't fly and, you know, do their own thing in the world, right? And that's, I know that is tough for parents. I completely understand that concept. But yeah, you know, this entitlement attitude, it's the seed for the end of the world, the collapse of civilization. Speaking of which, what did you think about that Super Bowl halftime show? I thought it was awful. I thought it was disgusting. Pathetic, I gotta tell you, okay? Now, I have seen Maroon 5 in concert twice, and I like Maroon 5. I like their music. But Adam Levine looked like a thug who just got out of prison, okay? I mean, seriously. Can you disagree with me? And he does his strip show on stage. I mean, what kind of values are these people giving our culture? Since when did it become cool to be like a thuggish loser? I don't get it. Like, seriously, there must be a generation gap. I am showing my age because I don't get it. I don't get it. I know. If you're cooler than me, go to jasonhartman.com/ask and tell me how clueless I am, because I need a wake-up call so I can be cool too and I can be a thug, right? It's just mind-boggling. I don't know, folks. I'm sure every generation says this about the generation coming after them. You know, how are they going to run the world? Who's going to run the world in 20 years, right? Yeah, it's a good question. It's a fair question. I think it really is. But hey, we've got a market update to get to. Enough of my ranting. This is what happens when you have a glass of wine. We have got a market profile today on Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We have not been in this market in several years, and we're back. We're back. And we're back with one of our local market specialists that we know well, that we've done a lot of work with. We probably wouldn't come back into this market with an unfamiliar team. But in this case, we know we've got a good team. And a very limited supply in this batch, just 13 properties, so a very limited supply, and I have a feeling that they will be sold. Boy, I can't even snap my fingers today, can I? Lickety-split, like hotcakes. Which, by the way, thank you all for purchasing so many Meet the Masters tickets. Wow, I'm super impressed with that. So we're looking forward to seeing you in March in Newport Beach, California. Go to jasonhartman.com/masters and get your tickets for that, because that room is filling up very, very nicely. We're about, what are we, about 47 days out or something like that, maybe. Get your tickets, jasonhartman.com/masters. And without further ado, let's get to our market profile and talk once again about Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Join us March 23rd and 24th for the 2019 Meet the Masters of Income property.
Let's break this down and look at some of the strengths of income property as an asset class.
I found that this event is really helpful because I'm totally a newbie to real estate investment, and so I picked up so much information.
One of the great things about it is that it's so fragmented, right? Embrace the fragmentation.
I've actually been learning a lot about tax benefits to real estate, and a lot of I've been investing actually well over 10 years now, and I learned a lot of new things today.
The other advantage of this weekend is networking, meeting new property managers, meeting new area specialists, and seeing the product they have to offer. That changes year by year.
Register now at jasonhartman.com/masters.
Hey, welcome listeners. I wanted to do a market profile on an area that we have not been selling in for quite a few years, but we are back in it, and that is Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We've got some good properties there, a very small supply. I hope by the time you hear this interview and this market profile, we have more properties in Baton Rouge, but let's just talk about that market and see what's going on there lately. Welcome. How is Baton Rouge doing?
Jason, thanks so much. Baton Rouge is doing very well. We've been doing a couple different projects down there, and we got one project that we're very excited to bring to the table. We've been doing some new construction, build-to-rent properties, so we think it provides an excellent cash flow and feel like it would be a tremendous product.
Yeah, it looks really good. We've got those on our website at jasonhartman.com in the properties section. It's amazing to get, you know, brand new build-to-rent properties for these prices. So let's talk about the properties first. Maybe we'll kind of go in reverse order. And then I want to talk about the general market, why you went there. We used to do a lot of business with you in Atlanta. Of course, prices in Atlanta largely went up too much. And you've got institutional investors you're working with now who aren't quite as picky about getting a good deal. We'll talk about that. But talk to us about the properties in Baton Rouge.
Yes, we basically found some developed lots in Baton Rouge and a little neighborhood. We ended up picking up 12 home sites. And so we're doing a new construction product, effectively build a rent. We made it as tenant proof as you possibly can, the granites, and we got the vinyl plank flooring that's siding on the outside and then brick in the front. It's a 1400 some odd square foot home, but it's four bedrooms to be able to maximize the tenant capacity and the rent. And we've had basically got our COs last week, and we've already gotten three tenants who are approved in our first five homes. We've got another seven that'll be following it up that are in construction right now.
Mm-hmm. And a CO is a certificate of occupancy.
Yeah, correct. Thank you.
Okay.
The tenant profile has been terrific. We've got some people who are laying some pipe for oil, and we've got some fracking tenants. So you're talking about very quality.
They're not fracking on your property.
That's a good point. No, they're fracking about 30 minutes away.
Okay, good.
But just a really quality profile of tenant that we're seeing on these products. And so we're excited to be able to bring that to the table.
That's great. So you're selling them pre-rented then, right?
Yes, these will be turnkey. We've got management in place. We've got, everything should be turnkey and ready to go. So if for some reason someone were to purchase them prior to us having a tenant, maybe it was buying it the day that the certificate of occupancy comes out or something like that, we could work out a rental situation. But yeah, we are planning on having all these pre-leased, and so someone will be cash flowing immediately upon purchase.
Fantastic. Okay, so what's the price and how much rent do they bring in?
We're at $155,000, and the first tenants that we've gotten are at $1,390.
Not bad at all.
Good about the numbers there.
Not bad at all. I mean, in this market, to get that close to 1% is pretty darn good on brand new construction. This is brand new construction, right?
Correct. Yep.
Now, why did you go to Baton Rouge? I mean, you live in Atlanta. We've done lots of business with you in Atlanta when the deals looked better years ago. Now they're just too darn expensive most of the time. But why Baton Rouge? Why'd you pick that market?
In 2016, we basically came across Baton Rouge because of a horrible flood that happened there, unfortunately. It was pretty devastating. And so a good percentage of the homes in the Baton Rouge metro area were affected. And so went down there with a crew and basically ended up flipping somewhere around 50 or 60 properties down there over the course of a year, year and a half. So we really got to know the city really well because we bought all over the place. And so we became interested, and then we have been looking for some land ever since just to be able to try to continue to keep a relationship with Baton Rouge and keep ties with it because we do like the market and what it's bringing to the table. We feel like because Atlanta, where I'm primarily based out of, is so saturated with investors and hedge funds and things of that nature, the returns down there are much more compelling. And so when you don't have to deal with that institutional investor, the competition.
And when you say down there, you mean Baton Rouge versus Atlanta, right?
Yes, sorry, correct. Yeah, when you're not having to deal with an institutional buyer who's willing to accept maybe a 5% return.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a moment. So Atlanta got crazy several years ago. I mean, we've been in the Atlanta market for, 10 years plus maybe. Yeah, well, definitely over 10 years now. And so, I've done lots of business in Atlanta over the years. That's no shortage of experience there. And when we were coming out of the Great Recession, I'm going to say, that it seemed to really sort of take over in about 2011, 2012. It's like all the institutional investors started just invading these markets. We were selling lots of properties in Phoenix, Atlanta, Denver, and boom, you just couldn't compete anymore because they were willing to, frankly, overpay. And they still are willing to overpay for properties. You said that they're willing to take a 5% return. Now, let's distinguish what you mean by return. You mean cash on cash return, right?
Correct.
Okay, so if the proforma says 5% cash on cash return, which both you and I would think is pretty low, that's nothing to write home about by any means. You know, hopefully you could do a lot better than 5% cash on cash. But they're willing to take that all day long, I guess, huh? And on Atlanta
they
properties,
are.
Right?
And there's a number of hedge funds in Atlanta currently doing it. So, it brought us to think about other markets. And the flood is what initially brought us to Baton Rouge. And so we're still well entrenched there. We own some multifamily and some other stuff. So we're active. But new construction, especially the build to rent, is something that we're very drawn to. And we like the model. So we're continuing to look for more and more properties down there to continue this.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, years ago, you never even heard anybody talk about a build-to-rent model for single-family homes. Of course, every apartment complex is a build-to-rent deal, you know, just by nature of the way it works. But build a neighborhood of single-family homes to rent, not to sell. This has really become popular. In fact, we've had John Burns of John Burns Real Estate Consulting on the show many times, and he spoke at our last Meet the Masters of Income Property event in Southern California. And just got a newsletter from him today, literally this morning, that talked about the build-to-rent phenomena and how that should be part of any multifamily portfolio. You know, there should be some single-family. When they say build-to-rent, they mean single-family homes in pretty much all cases, because naturally an apartment complex is built-to-rent, but single families aren't necessarily. So why do you like that model? In a way, you're doing it a little differently. You're building to rent then sell to individual investors, right?
Right. And we'll eventually like to hold some as well, but, you know, to build up capital. This is something that we're doing as a business. But I feel like the expenses are so minimal. If you're dealing with investors who maybe aren't as familiar with construction and things of that nature, it can be advantageous to buy a new construction product just so you don't get fooled or tricked by contractors and things of that nature. So there's a little bit of risk that you're eliminating by doing that. And it's a much easier product to manage. We like everything about it, really. As long as you can get it at the right price, of course, which is the hardest part.
Go back to that, the institutional investor discussion for a moment, if you would. Why is a hedge fund type of investor, or any institutional investor really, it's sort of all the same thought process, why are they willing to take such a low cash-on-cash return in the neighborhood of 5%, give or take?
My speculation on that would be that I'm sure they have some type of appreciation built into their model. I'm sure they're looking at it as an alternative to bonds, things of that nature, because they have such a huge amount of capital that they're having to invest and allocate that there's only so many higher return products they can find. So, my hunch is they feel like it's a safe investment, and getting 5% with the potential for appreciation and all the different depreciation aspects that real estate brings to the table is appealing to them. But it's been an interesting transition in Atlanta with all the different hedge funds that have come in the last 5-7 years.
It really is counterintuitive. You know, one would think, or at least I would, but I think other people would think this way. If you've got a mountain of cash to invest with, that you'd expect a bulk deal, that you'd get a better deal. but the opposite is true. You know, they need to deploy the cash so quickly that they're willing to take an inferior deal. That's just always struck me as odd. You know, we've worked with some of these institutional investors over the years, and they've purchased properties through us, and it's like, okay, here's a spreadsheet. We'll take these 14 houses. Boom. Done. No thinking too much about it. No quibbling. No, you know, it's just like, we just want to buy these. We'll take them. Done.
it's one thing that really, I think I'd mentioned it, but it really drew us to Baton Rouge, because you're talking about a very good sized population with the greater Baton Rouge area that really is one of the few cities that I'm aware of that doesn't have any hedge funds or institutional buyers that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen any activity down there.
Well, it's not one of the bigger markets, right? So, you know, they always gravitate toward the, I'll call them the second tier, but still trophy cities, Atlanta being one of them. And there are many others, of course, but this is really third tier. And this is where the individual investors still have the opportunity, because they haven't been crowded out by these institutional investors throwing too much cash around, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's just a really interesting phenomena. You know, it really is. Go ahead.
Yeah. One other thing I just wanted to clarify. Obviously, I went down there because of the flood initially. It was a 1,000-year flood. Mm-hmm. And so it did impact a huge amount of the city. This neighborhood that we're in did not flood at all. So there are some pre-existing homes. The developer went under in probably 05, 06, something like that. And so those homes did not flood. So we wanted to make sure that we felt good about the area and wanted to minimize our risk in terms of flood. So you got to like your odds. If it's a 1,000-year flood and it didn't flood, we do feel good about that, just in case anybody wanted clarity on that.
Right, right. Okay, good. What else should people know? I'd love to just get your take on the market in general. And are you out trying to grow your business and spending more and taking risk now? Or are you reining in your horns and you're concerned about a change in the economy? What's your thinking?
I've never been a big proponent of keeping what cash I have in the bank. So I'm usually trying to put it in one type of real estate or another, but I am all real estate, and I am looking for different avenues. I'm actually building some homes in Atlanta as well, looking for multifamily, which is really tough to find deals there. I am pretty bullish still on the overall market. I'm not aggressive, so I see it probably as a little bit more of a slow market or a slight decline, but I think there's still deals to be had. You just have to look a little bit harder. So I'm still deploying capital and aggressively doing a number of different things. I do find some deals for different funds as well. So I'm pretty active in the market. I feel pretty good about where we're at, as long as the interest rates can stay within a reasonable range of where they are now.
Well, look, you've got a rental portfolio and a flip portfolio. So if the interest rates, if they go up, then your rents will just get better. I mean, it's you play one or the other. It's either the capital appreciation game when rates are low, and there's just this massive amount of buying activity out there with a shortage of inventory of properties, or you have more plentiful for sale inventory of properties, but people who don't move out of the renter pool or can't qualify anymore because housing affordability declines, and then they've just got to stay in the renter pool, and they're willing to pay more in rents. It's just supply and demand, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we're still very active. I enjoy what I do. I'm thankful.
Yeah. Just one last question for you. On the Baton Rouge tenant profile, how much of that is assisted housing, if any, Section 8 type of stuff? Do you have that element there?
It's possible that a Section 8 or a subsidized tenant does end up leasing property or two that we have built. But right now it is it's all market tenants and all good wages. And like I said, they were in the fracking industry. And then another one was doing pipe. I think it's for, maybe it's for gas. But either way, I mean, energy is huge in Louisiana, given its location. So
oh, sure.
That has been our profile so far.
Okay, so not much in the way of government-assisted rental, mostly just regular free market tenants, right?
Correct.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Good stuff. Well, hey, it's been very interesting talking to you again. And go get some more inventory, because we need more inventory for our clients. It's interesting, if you listen to the news, they'll talk about how the real estate market is slowing down. But that is only in the high-flying cyclical markets. We sure haven't seen this, and we've been looking for it. The good, solid, linear cash flow markets, inventory is just tight as a drum still. And, anytime we can find good inventory, our clients will just gobble it up. There's sadly, folks, you got to beware, because there's a lot of promoters out there selling some really crappy inventory right now. It's the old lipstick on a pig concept. They make it look good, but it's really just junk in some junky, fourth and fifth tier cities. It's amazing the kind of junk some people are promoting out there nowadays. But it's easy, right? Because that junk is still plentiful. You got to get the good product. And did you want to speak to that at all? Because you see it out there. You see a lot of people just promoting this absolute crap.
Yeah, I get probably hundreds of emails a day with different wholesalers bringing me opportunities based on what we do. But yeah, there's definitely, if you're looking for properties, there's a lot of older properties that you got to be very weary of. 1930s, 40s, 50s, at least in Atlanta. That is, it comes up a lot, and it's kind of the attractive thing on the HGTV shows to make them look good, but it's not easy. So if you don't know what you're doing and don't have a trusted source, it can definitely burn you. So,
All right.
We feel like this is about as low risk as you can get in the new construction market.
Good stuff. Well, hey, thanks for joining us, and happy investing.
Thanks so much for having me, Jason.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.